Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined by Tim Longa, and it was quite an interesting game this past weekend in Minnesota. That both Sim, we have quite a few thoughts on, and we will dive into that. But first, let's start on a positive note. And that was the big announcement Monday afternoon. The Purdue men's basketball team voted number one in the preseason AP Top 25 poll, first time in program history. Not much of a surprise, I would say, but it was just neat to see it actually become official there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time in school history. And yeah, I think just kind of from all the, if you were listening during the off season as we were, landing various, whether it was transfers or, getting Omer, it just kind of had that feel of like, okay, yeah, we might ask this, you had the feeling that Purdue was going to be ranked pretty high up to start off the year. And then it kind of even seemed, even as we got into like August and September, it just kind of sounded like more and more like, oh no, it's probably going to be, one or two, some type stuff. So, it's kind of crazy, man. Like what was it? I feel like it was what, probably 7 years ago when we got to number one for the first time. And now we're at the point where, at least for myself, not that I don't appreciate getting to the number one spot because I want to be number one to end the year, but now we're at the point now where we've spent numerous weeks at being number one in season. Obviously, yeah, getting to that number one spot just in general, as I touched on earlier, but now we're at the point where even going into a season, we are. I think we as fans, we along with the team had high expectations in terms of goals and what this and what potentially the team could do. But the fact that that's been kind of solidified in terms of the degree of the expectations with being preseason number one, yeah, it's great, man. It's really great. I guess I can just start stressing from day one now.
Well, and speaking of stressing, I did want to just touch on this schedule that this Boilermaker team is going to have. So they will play a gauntlet of ranked teams, which include, and this is in order of how they're ranked. So this will be throughout this year, obviously, but Purdue opponents include Michigan, who comes in ranked 7th. You have the exhibition game with Kentucky, who came in ranked 9th. It's very possible and likely in their tournament in November that they could play Texas Tech, who came in ranked 10th. UCLA, they'll play, who's 12th. Alabama, they'll play, who's 15th. Iowa State, they'll play, who's 16th. Illinois, they'll play, who's 17. Auburn comes in at 20. Michigan State, 22. And Wisconsin at 24. So,
Jesus Christ.
there will be some stressful games, but we've talked a lot about this in prior episodes. This is what you want. You want to go up against the best teams, and kind of, see how your team responds in those games to get you ready for the inevitable run, hopefully in March.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, we talked about, like you said in previous episodes, about the benefit of having just within the non-conference of having, some challenging games there, because it gives you that early season feel of like, okay, where are we at? Where do we stack up versus where we want to be versus, versus the rest of the country. And from there you have kind of like a You have like kind of like a benchmark of like, okay, here's where we're at now. We want to continue to strive in the right direction, and you're gonna and based on the number of ranked teams you just mentioned there that are all on Purdue's schedule, there's going to be routine tests seemingly. There's going to be consistent points in the season where you're probably where they're probably facing ranked teams back to back, or at least one ranked team probably a week, and every time out, where you know you're gonna get. whether it's a ranked team or it's a or it's an unranked team, you're gonna get the team's best shot. So in terms of this team understanding that they have a certain level to play at, that they're gonna be at, that they're gonna need to play at night in and night out, I like it for them because you can run into certain situations where if a team is really talented but the schedule isn't as good, they might fall into the pattern of this. I mean, they might fall into a situation of playing down to their opponent and not necessarily bringing out their best. And then all of a sudden, they're gonna, they face someone who's hot, whether it's an unranked team or if it is a ranked team, a team that's coming out, like hunting. And now you're kind of on your back foot. And hopefully, based on the way the schedule is, you don't really have any nights off, so you have to be prepared to bring your best every game, day in and day out. So yeah, that's a lot of ranked teams, man. That's a lot of ranked teams. And so, if Purdue's able to do the things that we believe that they're capable of doing, I think that they believe they're capable of doing, I don't think we'll be sitting there at the end of the regular season going into the tourney being like, I don't know if this Purdue team is battle tested enough. I think we'll probably be able to say they're more than battle tested. And I think, too, even if they're losing some of those games during the season, I think that it wouldn't necessarily be reason to panic because even then, going into the tournament, you hopefully will be able to learn from those experiences, and it kind of allows you to be able to kind of to hopefully up your game once we got to once we got to that tournament time.
No, I agree. And I think it just also goes to show like how good and deep and strong the Big Ten is this year, as well. But we will have much more on the basketball team, including a whole preview episode. But we are very quickly coming up on the start of the year as the less than 2 weeks out now from the exhibition game against Kentucky, which will be October 24th. And then the exhibition game back in Mackey on the 29th. And then it all gets real on November 4th against Evansville. So, less than a month away from the home opener, and it'll get here real fast. Much more on that. But just wanted to highlight that and give a quick shout out to Coach Paint and the team there for anytime you can do something for the first time in program history. That's always neat. So now let's just see if they can be number one come April there.
Right, bookend it the right way.
But Sim, let's talk about this weekend, man. The Boilermakers came up short. 27-20 was the final in Minnesota, and pretty disappointing game, man. Not gonna lie. It felt like everything was there for the taking. I'm just gonna read just some quick stats here. So,
Well, here you go.
in total yards, Purdue had 456 to Minnesota's 262. Rushing yards, Purdue had 253. They held Minnesota to 30 yards rushing. They had the ball for over 15, for almost, I'm sorry, for almost 10 more minutes than Minnesota. They held the ball for 34 minutes, to Minnesota's 25. You completed two of three conversions on fourth down. You got out to a 10-0 lead and you still lost. This one hurt, man. I know you have a lot to say about this as well, but just like this was one of the tougher losses we've had in the past few years because, like we said, like it was right there for the taking. I feel like Coach Odom and his staff outcoached the crap out of Fleck and his staff. The game plan was there, and it seemed like it was a really good game plan. And in critical spots, it was just failure to execute that game plan.
Yeah, I if you had told me before the game the stats that you mentioned out, like just and not obviously not the specific numbers, but if you said that Purdue was going to outrush them by over two, what was it, over 200 yards? Yeah, by over 200 yards, that we would outgain them by then essentially in total yards by over 200, that you would have more forced first downs. You would have the ball for almost 10 minutes more, and the defense would have forced a turnover. I would have, to me personally, I would have been stunned
And
if I
got two sacks.
right. I would have been stunned. I would have been stunned if you told me that they did lose. This one, yeah, you're just like you said, this one hurts, man. This one hurts because we talked about it in the preview episode about how this was really kind of that fork in the road for this team. You'd lost three straight, and it was like, hey man, but if you can win this one, it kind of recenters everything. You're literally back to even. You're back, 500 the rest of the way. And with the way the rest of the October schedule was looking like, this was an opportunity to get a win that could really spring you some momentum to try to get a couple more before the end of the month. And we've talked about it with the Illinois game, and I believe with the USC game, and I mean obviously I've even I mean well actually we've talked about it for the last four games about how if Purdue doesn't hurt themselves and you're able to play complimentary football, you'll be in the fourth. And this was that. They did everything they needed to do through three quarters to have the lead going into the fourth. And then on that point, we talked about, hey, then in the fourth, it's about executing. You're gonna have to close the show. And it was extremely disappointing to watch the way that we shot ourselves in the foot, were unable to execute, and essentially gave one away. I mean, you can talk about things obviously
100%.
all throughout the game, but fuck, man, like that was to me that game was one you were supposed to have. You were supposed to have that one. It was supposed to give you some of the warm and fuzzies going into and you could use that. I think because I think it would have been a big win in the sense of not just like, hey, you've snapped the losing streak, but it's a road win in conference. Like that's for a team that with as many new faces as Purdue and essentially like nobody knew what they were going to get, what they were going to give you. That would have been a huge win, a huge win, a huge momentum boost. I feel like it really, really would have been a proper springboard for these guys to try to turn it around. And now we just kind of find ourselves in the same situation. And my hope is that this doesn't really kind of lead itself to some type of avalanche mentally. I don't think it will because I believe like Odom and his staff in terms of the way that they're gonna continue to ask more of these guys because they know it's there. And I think again, you saw on Saturday, you saw the potential is there. But fuck, man, this was one you had to have. I just given the fact that of how you had played, even despite your own mistakes in those first three quarters. That even despite all of that, you were still up seven going into the fourth, and you couldn't bring it home.
I think you hit the nose on the head when you say that this is one that they just gave away. One of the many frustrating things from this weekend was it was a lot of the same issues that we've seen.
Right.
You still really struggle in the red zone for whatever reason. You get in the red zone five times and you come away with one touchdown. And you only score three of those five total. You don't score in the red zone more than you score touchdowns. That's usually not a good recipe. And then you get flagged for nine penalties, and a couple of those were just absolute backbreakers, including the two face masks on the drive that Minnesota went down to score in the fourth to tie it. Like, you essentially just gave them that drive because of those two penalties. And then, the turnovers kind of go hand in hand with the red zone stuff. Because you did have another turnover in the red zone. And then, you have the other, the two other interceptions, and one, they both lead directly to points because one obviously is the pick six, and the other Minnesota intercepts it at, I think, like at like the 30-yard line. And so, shout out to the defense to holding them to a field goal there, but like there's 10 points right there just on those two interceptions. There's never a good time to miss a kick, but the kick that Spencer missed was just came at the worst time too. I really felt like that kind of took some air out of like some of the momentum that we had. But man, those the red zone issues and the penalties and the turnovers, I mean, that was about as ugly as you can get in those three areas.
Yeah, well, and they're all the things that we have discussed. Like when you, they're all the things that we've discussed that Purdue really like. You can't afford to do. You can't be turning the ball over in the red zone. When you get in the red zone, you have to finish with points. And honestly, you have to score touchdowns, especially when you're on the road. When you're playing, when you're playing better teams, your margin for error is so much smaller. And like you mentioned, the two picks, one leading the field goal. And again, yeah, shout out to the defense for being able to hold them to three, and obviously the pick six. Obviously I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Mox, which, let me be clear, I don't mind the play call. I don't mind it at all. For those of you who were saying, oh, why do you run that play? Look, all season we've been running trick plays, and there's been others that probably shouldn't have played out for us, but they did. That one you would argue it should have. The issue I have with that play is just I just wish Mock it looked like Mock hesitated when he got the ball, like, because based on the fact when he threw it, it looked like the receiver was wide open. So it's just kind of like, man, you just wish he would have been able to get that out faster. But nonetheless, that happens damn near at the goal line. So that's taking points off. So, they get 10 points off our turnovers. The one turnover that we do cause, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and necessarily complain about getting a turnover because that was the first pick that Purdue's defense has been able to generate all year. But you're not able to then cash that in for points. But nonetheless, your point, every when we turn the ball over, it seems as though it's almost always leading to points. And you can't be helping these teams. If you take 10 points away from Minnesota, we win. Let's just call it what it is. If you take those 10 points away, we win. And you just like it's just like you said, it's more of the same. Nine penalties for 71 yards. Winning football teams, they're not doing that. And I think even you, yeah, you'd be challenged to find a good football team who could commit nine penalties and still win the game. So definitely for a team like Purdue who has been struggling, trying to figure things out, trying to get things back together, they like you can't afford that. You couldn't afford those mishaps. Like you said too, with Spencer and the field goal, I don't want to give him too much shit because he's been relatively solid for the entire year. But yeah, like you said, it was just one of those moments on the road, especially. You have to be when momentum is kind of on the is kind of in the balance. That's kind of when you really need to be your sharpest. You needed to have that, because that would have been able to just kind of calm things just a bit. So it just, yeah, it just really pisses me off, man. And I mean, obviously, it's Tuesday now we're recording, but I've been hot ever since Saturday, man. I've been running hot since Saturday on this, man, because this was really one where I felt like, is really one where I just felt like you could have it. I felt like this was a winnable game, and it was playing out that way. And to not have it, just fuck.
No, and one more thing to talk about as far as the execution and some of the bugaboos that we've seen so far that we haven't really talked about was the drops too. The wide receivers got to be better. I feel like we kind of talked a little bit about it last week, and part of last week more so than this week I felt like with some of Ryan Brown accuracy issues. I don't think that was the case this past weekend.
No, I
I
don't.
think
Yeah, go ahead.
did a
Sorry.
much better job putting the ball in spots for his wide receivers to make plays. And they just didn't. You had drops, you had receivers running routes or stopping routes or some kind of miscommunication on the first Brown interception. Not sure what happened there. Just got to be better. Like your biggest pass play was 27 yards. It just felt like they left a lot out on the table. And when you have as many drops as they did, that's probably going to lead to that. And it wasn't just one guy too. It was kind of, I think that's kind of the disheartening thing about all the drops is it's not just like one guy. It's almost like it's gotten into their head as like a unit. And it's kind of snowballed for the whole receiving room.
Right. No, that I agree. I it's you know, it feels like just a few weeks ago we were sitting there singing the praises of the wide receiving group and how, you know, they about how they were really one of the shining stars of the team in general, and they just seem to have caught have collectively got a case of the dropsies. And like you said, it's not just one guy. It's really all across the board. But you know, they need to turn that around because, as you said, I don't think it was necessarily an issue of Brown being off. You know, he gave guys opportunities to make plays, and unfortunately, they weren't able to do so. And I'm not going to try to beat up on them too much because you know I'm as frustrated as I think you know like you and I are, and we collectively as fans are. I know that those guys are probably even more upset, you know, because they're the ones who are, you know, putting in the work, they're the ones practicing and preparing, and they have the most skin in the game on this one. But man, it just yeah, we just didn't I just didn't see this stretch, I'll say. I'm not gonna say it's the overarching you know the perception of the wide receiver group, like this is who they are, but just this particular stretch that they've been in as of late with seemingly a lot of noteworthy drops. You really hope they're able to turn it around because there's still going to be some games, still going to be, obviously we still have plenty of football left to play in the season, so there's going to be opportunities, you know, to kind of get this around. But the drops are concerning because it can be very much so a mental thing, and if it's in your head like that, you know, it can snowball, you don't want that, man. You don't want that. And I got to say one more thing about the passing game. I believe I saw, what was it? Was it Brown threw 50 times? Did I see that correctly? Or threw for 40, excuse me. And you're throwing the ball 40 times. Yeah, and I think he was only, yeah, 20. I mean, 40 times, it seems like a lot. That's kind of, for me, it's kind of like the fringe of like, all right, if you're throwing more than 30, 35, upwards towards 40, that's probably not necessarily spelling good things for us. But yeah, just nobody's really void of blame here. I mean, hell, I'll even say for the offense as a whole, I thought that for what the defense did in the first like quarter and a half, I think they caused four. I think they created four. It was four punts for Minnesota in that first quarter. That's kind of where I look back then too, at the first turnover, at the Maccabee pick. When I look at it, it's just as crushing because you're up 7-0, you have the ball, you have the opportunity to go up 14-0, which I don't think we've seen that since maybe Ball State, and the way that can kind of swing a game momentum wise. And so for that not to happen, especially on the backs of what your defense is doing, you know, it's complimentary football kind of at its finest right there. But yeah, it just seems like it's the little, it's again, it continues to kind of be the details, you know, it's those little things. We're still able to move the ball on offense, but you know, you're not able to finish drives off with touchdowns. You know, we're able to on defense, you're able to get, you know, you're able to get a team to, you know, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. But you're not able to get off the field, you know, or you give up, you know, or you know, it's been, you give up 8 yards, it's 3rd and 9, you give up 8 yards, and all of a sudden the team goes for it because it's 4th and 1. And I'm like, yeah, why not? And that's a lot harder to stop. So it's the little things just kind of that you really hope that one of these days they're able to kind of that they're able to it just clicks, I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where like if you had an issue with like one of these areas, you'd probably be able to overcome it. But when it was literally like a perfect storm of like everything going bad. And you just can't have that all happen, especially on the road. In an environment like that, like you just can't have everything that happened happen. I did want to just highlight those, Sim, because I don't think this unit is getting enough credit. And for whatever reason, it's not being talked about, but give some love to the offensive line. Those guys went out and played their tails off. Anytime you can go on the road and go on the road in the Big Ten and your team rushes for 256 yards, you throw 42 pass attempts total and don't give up a sack. That's pretty impressive stuff. And this was a unit that, we had questions about coming in. But man, whether it was run blocking, pass blocking, they seem to be all over, dominating the line of scrimmage. And that's one thing that you really would like to see kind of get carry over. And, to your point, like, with Brown throwing it 40 times, this seems to kind of be a thing where, like, maybe we need to cut back on that, lean on the run more. Like, you have a dude in Devin Mockbee, probably I wouldn't say probably your best offensive threat. Feed him the rock, and this offensive line I felt like was really impressive this past weekend.
Yeah, no, I mentioned earlier, yeah, no one's really void of blame. Honestly, if there is someone who is void of blame, it probably is the O-line. When you point out those stats, I mean, like you said, 40 rushes overall and 256 yards, you're averaging, excuse me, no, what, 253. Yeah, 6.3 a carry. And like you said, for Brown to drop back 40 times and not get touched, when we've seen at times this O-line really struggle in one of, if not both areas, but for them to have the performance that they had, that's definitely, if you're going to take some positive, some goods out of this, that is definitely one. And like you said, I hope it, I hope that it is a performance that is able, that like it's a performance that I hope that they kind of look at as like, hey, this can be our standard. And I hope that it's something that they're able to replicate going forward. Because, and like you said, because if they're able to, then I think that's going to organically lead to us running the ball more. Because in those situations, that we were in this past Saturday, you're up 20-13, there's going to be times where like, hey, we're going to need to run the ball because we're going to need to bleed this clock out. And there, the ability to be able to line up the team across your opponent know that you're going to run it, you run it, you still get 4 or 5 yards. That is a powerful strength to have. That's a key thing to have, the ability to be able to run really at all times, and especially when you need to run. So yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah, absolutely got to give kudos to the O-line, because they had some games this year where it looked like they didn't belong being on the field, honestly. And their performance on Saturday, yeah, it definitely was something to brag in, or to brag about, to hold their heads up high about. But I'm sure they're probably thinking more like, yeah, that was cool, but we didn't win. So, but yeah, it was really, really good from them. I was very impressed with them. That's a good call out by you, Ben.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the defense just a little bit as a whole. When we did the preview episode, we were kind of curious about how this defense would come out and respond after Odom kind of called him out following that Illinois game. And I was pretty impressed from, if you look at it from start to finish, how they played. We talked about the interception that they got, and they got home a couple of times, but I thought in general they played really, really well, man. Like, essentially, if you take out obviously the pick six, I would also argue, to take out the field goal that they gave up from Brown's first interception, you're looking at 17 points that they gave up. And if you would have told me that leading into the game, I think we both would have been ecstatic, for them to do that on the road. And I know there's individual plays, that they need to clean up, in that, on that first scoring drive, it was a couple of big plays that Minnesota hit that kind of felt like, some of those past games. But credit to them, they kind of tightened up after that, and kind of eliminated those. And then on the last scoring drive, it was really the penalties that got them. But when you look at it, as a whole, it's hard not to be impressed with how they played, against what, a pretty decent offense there, and to hold Minnesota to 30 yards rushing. Like, it stinks because, like, these first few weeks we were like, well, man, the offense is really humming. If we can just get this defense, to kind of get their stuff figured out, we'll be rocking and rolling. And now it was kind of flipped, where the defense really played their tails off and the offense let them down. But I do think we need to give some credit to this defense, because when you look at how they played throughout this game, it's hard not to come away impressed.
Yeah, no, man, I agree, man. Like, I mentioned it earlier. The first four drives of the game for Minnesota all were punts. Looking at the stats right now, and the first four drives, Minnesota had 14 plays, 14 plays that went for 14 plays that went for a total 20 yards. That's outstanding. That's outstanding from the defense. And even that last the last possession, excuse me, of that four was in the first was the first possession for Minnesota in the second quarter. And it was after the interception, and it was a three and out. Held them 2 yards, got the ball back. Of the it seems what Minnesota had the ball 12 times. Eight of those possessions either ended in a punt or a pick. So, that should be seven of them were punts. Were actually they were one, two, yeah, seven of them ended in punts, in which six of those seven were three and outs, and then they had the interception. So they overall, yeah, they did do well. And like you mentioned, there was just it's just again, it's the details. It's just those probably handful of plays for them. And I agree with you. I think they definitely heard the message loud and clear from Odom after the Illinois presser about about how, I mean, honestly, kind of for lack of better words, he was kind of hanging the loss on them, in terms of their performance. Just knowing the defense could play better as a whole, and those guys really responded to that, especially coming out the gates. Again, that's why I kind of look at that first quarter as kind of a swinging point, because he had an opportunity to really kind of jump on Minnesota. But yeah, like you said, man, they kind of, for the most part, they kind of did everything you would have asked for them to do in terms of being able to get off the field and get off the field. They were able to force a turnover. So now, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking I'm a dumbass for what I said earlier in terms of what the defense was struggling with. But like you said, it's been more of it was like a change of fortunes between the offense and the defense. The offense was kind of the one we were sitting there looking at, like, yeah, you have something here. The defense just needs to kind of get on board. And now it's okay, the defense is on board, but then the offense is the one who's struggling. So, but yeah, the defense, man, they overall, outside of, yeah, probably a handful of plays, they were pretty solid, man. They were pretty solid. And I think this is that, I would argue if they put that same performance again this upcoming week against Northwestern, and you get better from the offense, sets you up for good. You know, so, you know, I think I'll say this. I think you'll at least find yourself in that same position of leading, being in the game in the fourth, and then it's going to be on you in terms of, all right, guys, can we really lock in and finish this bitch off the way we need to?
Yeah, no, I would agree. Like, if you are going to tell me right now that the defense is going to give up 20 points against Northwestern, I would take that right now, 10 times out of 10.
Right.
But Sim, let's talk. Let's look ahead now to this Northwestern game. You talked a little bit about it, but I feel like it needs to be brought back up again, and that's kind of like, what are we gonna see from this team this weekend? Last week we kind of talked about like how this was kind of a fork in the road game, and unfortunately they made the wrong turn at the fork. But now, can you get back on the right road, or do you kind of keep going down this road? And I'm with you. I think with everything they have in place, I feel confident that they're gonna right the ship and get back on the right side of the road. But that has to happen. That's kind of like what Odin was talking about in his presser, was like, yeah, we're right there. We're really close, but now we just, for lack of a better term, just gotta freaking do it. And so, I'm really curious to see kind of how this team responds again this week, and what kind of effort, and what kind of team we'll see out there.
Yeah, I think with each loss, you start to question like what, how much fight are you going to see out of these guys, you know, the following week. And I don't think that's been a question of like, are these guys trying? Are they competing? I don't think that's been it. But like you said, we're at the point of the program now, as Odom even mentioned, as you referenced that Odom said, we're at the point of the program now where the effort and the execution, the only way you can really be okay with it is if it's leading to wins. Like if you have a win to show for it, I think that's the point we're at now. And I'm glad that that's the point we're at now, where we're like, hey, look, we've seen that we have the capabilities to be able on both sides of really on in all three phases, we have the ability to be a team that plays winning football. But like we need to win. We need to win. We need to actually have it be winning football. We need me you and I need to be back on here talking about a win and not so much of like we gave one away or like, oh yeah, you weren't able to make the plays down the stretch, blah blah blah. Like all the things we've been saying and whatnot, like that needs to not be the case. It needs to be, hey, this team found a way to win. And I think that's kind of gonna be my thing for them as especially the rest of this month, because between the Northwestern game and then the Rutgers game, I think those will be opportunities for this team to try to be able to, you know, to be able to get to hopefully get a couple wins. But yeah, man, it's just like I do believe that the team will be able to, when you see the performances like we just mentioned about with the O-line and the defense as a whole, when you see those type of performances, you know it's there. And albeit it didn't really show itself, I guess from the wide receivers, you know that they have the abilities there. And it's just kind of like, guys, if we can put all of this together, and then we have to consolidate, wrap it up in a nice package, and we can get a win. You can get a win. But that's just it's really just that it's that cut dry now for me. It's that black and white. It's you're either winning or you're not now. Because we've seen the glimpses, we've seen the, I wouldn't say the ceiling, but we've seen the upside of all facets of this team. And it's time now that all of it kind of aligned the right way and us be able to finish it. And I think that if this team plays the way that they did against, I mean, again, you're gonna have to minimize the mistakes. I don't like Ryan Brown, you can't be throwing two picks. Like that's kind of where it is. I mean, you threw three overall, but you need better from the quarterback in terms of taking care of the football. Obviously, nine penalties, as we mentioned earlier, you have to clean that up. But if you're able, and if you're able to do that, again, I like your chances. I like our chances going into like our chances going in going into I would rather going into the fourth. That's kind of where that's kind of where I put the barometer at. It's like if you're doing these things through three quarters, you'll be there in the fourth. And if you're there in the fourth, you got to be able to now bring it home. And they did that last week. They did what they needed to do, even despite their own mistakes. Still had the lead going into the third, but now we need that last 15. You need that last 15 to bring it home.
No, I agree. And I think, to your point, like specifically these next 2 weeks, it just, I wouldn't call them like must win games, but like
They're the last
with
real
these two games,
shots to win, in my opinion. They're the last two probably really feasible chances to win. Maybe Washington.
yeah. And you just, you're not gonna like get excited about playing close game or playing, playing hard
Right.
the
No
whole
moral
game
victories.
or being, yeah, you need actual victories
Right.
here. And I think that we'll see the team respond that way. I have no reason not to think that we'll see kind of a very hungry team. But Sim, this Northwestern team is not going to be a pushover. They come in 4-2 overall, 2-1 in conference play. And really, like so far this year, we kind of joked before we recorded that they've kind of been like the executioner for coaches this year. If you lose to Northwestern,
Get
you
fired.
get fired at
Right.
this rate. Like it happened to UCLA, it happened to Coach Franklin at Penn State. They've kind of been a team you don't want to lose to if you're a head coach. Not that, I'm saying that if they lose and they did fire Odom, but just kind of interesting how that's played out. But Sim, they got off to a really rough start at the start of the year. They had a really bad loss against Tulane to start the year. They lost 23-3 in just an ugly game there. But they were able to bounce back. They knocked off Western Illinois in week two, 42-7. And then lost at home to Oregon 34-14. But they're on a three-game winning streak now after beating UCLA, Louisiana, Monroe, and then of course Penn State last weekend in the big upset in Happy Valley. So, they're riding a three-game winning streak. They're gonna be, having all kinds of momentum too. This is not gonna be an easy game in a place that's been weirdly tough for Purdue to go and play in.
Yeah, man. You were mentioning the games earlier this year, and I was looking at the stats of quarterback. His name is escaping me right now. But he threw four picks in the first game against Tulane, and then he threw two against Oregon. Outside of that, he hasn't thrown a pick. Now, granted, yes, he did have a game against Louisiana Monroe. I mean, so yeah, I would hope he wouldn't throw any picks there. But no picks against UCLA, no picks against Penn State. I don't feel like that's anything to kind of overlook. I will steal from my co-host's terminology here and say that hopefully he's due to throw to be a bit charitable and throw some picks. But yeah, you're gonna have your work cut out for you. Looking at the scores of some of these games too. Penn State 22-21, UCLA 17-14. They have the ability in these close games to be able to pull it to pull through, and that's one we were just talking about with Purdue about if you're in a close game and if you're in it, having to make the plays at the hour it's required, making winning plays. And in this three-game winning streak, Northwestern clearly has done that. They put the drive together when they've needed to. They've gotten stops when they've needed to. And if you're Purdue, you have to be aware of that. You have to be mindful of that. So I look at, this week just the same way as I looked at with last week. You want to try to get a fast start. You want to try to, to get the lead, take the crowd out of it, and force them to have to go out of their game to try to catch you. Because if you can get them down early and then really force them to have to put the ball in the air to try to move downfield, again, that's where you can find yourself trying to heat up that quarterback, and hopefully he gets a little charitable, gets a little loose with some of those throws, and then you're able, to really, really make this a belt to ass affair. Because if it's late, if it's close late, that's a team who you can't expect Northwestern to falter, because they haven't shown that to this point. They've shown an ability to rise to the occasion.
It'll be a kind of a weird start time, but a 3 p.m. kickoff on Big Ten Network. Again in Evanston. It'll be the last of a little 2-game road trip for the team. But Sim, I'm gonna put you on the spot here now. Does Northwestern extend their winning streak to 4 games? Or do the Boilermakers start their own winning streak this weekend?
This is rude. Last week I went in favor of Purdue, and I feel like I was right. They just the universe colluded against me. They didn't want me on here talking shit. That's okay. But what I have faith in this team. I still have faith in them. So I'm going to say that Purdue will win 27-17.
Okay. I am also in the same boat. I tried the reverse jinx last week and it obviously didn't work. But I think they get right here. This feels like a team that is gonna come out hungry, almost kind of desperate in a good way, if that makes sense. I think give Coach Odom some credit. Like we've seen this team improve kind of from week to week. Now, obviously, like we've talked about, they're nowhere near a finished product, but it seems like each week when they try to focus on something, you see an improvement there. And I think you're gonna see kind of a change in game plan. I think they're just essentially just going to say, F it, let's just run the ball. Run it until we can't get stopped. I would be shocked and I would be disappointed if Ryan Brown is like has more than like 35 attempts. I think it's going to be a ground and pound game. I think it's going to be kind of an ugly game, but I think that's kind of what Purdue is going to want in this game. And I think they're going to come away 24-21.
Jeez, my
So
chest.
seems weird that we just spent all this time talking about how disappointed we were. But yet we both think that they're going to come away victorious this weekend. But I think that's just, again, what made last week so disappointing was that,
So they should have. They should have. Well, they should have.
outside
Sorry.
of a few plays, they played well.
That's the thing. It's like, I think it's clear the frustration that we have. But it's clear the frustration we have about last week. But that, to me, that frustration only stems because you were there. That should have been yours. Like this Purdue team should be 3-3 right now, with us having a proper conversation about, like, yo, if they fuck around these next couple weeks and win, like, you're 5-3 going into the last month of the season. And then are you able to catch someone slipping in November and snag that last one? Now all of a sudden you become bowl eligible. But now you're at this point where if you're on that Purdue football, if you're on that Purdue team, and you had any belief of, like, hey, look, we can at least get to a bowl this year, the margin for error has shrunk exponentially. And so now you're really staring down the barrel of the gun of like, you don't really have any margin for error anymore. Because as we talked about, and if you look at the schedule, like after when you get into November, that's going to be extreme. It's going to be an extremely challenging month. And as you pointed out, I think when you've heard Odom and you've heard that staff come out and acknowledge deficiencies or units that didn't perform well, and how that's very clearly then been a point of emphasis that person that following week in practice, I think you've seen in the game that unit has been able to respond. And I think in the areas where they weren't their best, I think that those will be again points of emphasis this week. And I think for the units that did well, so I think obviously overall for the defense, and I think for the O line, they're going to sit there and be like, guys, we don't want this to just be a flash in the pot. We want to build off of this. You want to try to be consistent and string performances together. And like you said, I think that if the game is actually ugly and kind of lower scoring, I actually think that bodes well for Purdue, because now in terms of having to more rely on your offense, like, hey, you got to continue to put up points because, like, because Northwestern's high flying offense, you're hopefully not having to do that. And if you're able to then, hey, if we can minimize the mistakes and not give them short fields, not give them additional possessions, you'd like to think that with our offense and with our defense, with our team as a whole, that we'd be able to bring it home. And so that's why, like, for me, it's just more of the optimism and then kind of looking at what this coaching staff has been able to do in terms of being able to turn things around and get better performances out of guys following a week where they didn't necessarily play as well. Like, it wouldn't surprise me too if the wide receivers came out with a massive chip on their shoulder, being like, no, like, everyone thinks that we suck now. Not how this goes. I think Ryan Brown kind of the same way, because I'm sure now he's looking at it. He leads the conference in picks, so he doesn't want that. He doesn't want that label, and I'm pretty sure for himself, he knows if he's not taking care of the football, that's not winning football. If he's not being smart with where it's going, that's not winning football, and that's the type of stuff that can open up conversations about his playing time, and I'm sure he doesn't want that. I'm sure he wants to put together a better performance as well. So it's probably just the strongest batch of hopium I've ingested since, but like, I don't care. I want Purdue to win. And I think that they can win. That's the thing. I really think they can win. There's just some things they need to clean up from last week. And I think if they do that, I think that they'll be able to win, to win. I genuinely do. I genuinely feel that way. It's just a matter of whether or not they actually do it. And like you said, now them actually doing it is, did you win? Yes. Okay, you did. If did you not? Okay, no, then you lost. You know what I mean? Like, if you lost, then no, you didn't. So, yeah.
No, I'm with you. This feels like one that you can get. Feels like one you kind of need to get. And I think we'll see a very motivated team this weekend with a chip on their shoulder and kind of with something to prove there. But we'll see what happens again. 3 p.m. kickoff on Big Ten Network. Just got to get it. And so we'll see what they can do. But Sim, before we wrap this up, I did just want to discuss a little volleyball as well, because we talked about it on the last episode, how big of a weekend this was for the Boilermakers. And it started off really, really good. An impressive sweep on the road against the Buckeyes on Thursday. And then this weekend they return home to face the number one team in the country. If you have Big Ten Plus, hopefully you were able to enjoy it. Won't go down that road again, but still can't believe that that game was on Big Ten Plus. But
I can say, shit, I got time.
it was a game where it felt like the ladies needed to kind of get that first set,
Absolutely.
and kind of, that would give them some confidence leading into the rest of the match. And They played Nebraska about as tough as you can play them in that first set, and were unable to come away with that one. And it just kind of felt like it just kind of let the sails out a little bit. They end up getting swept in this one, but I don't think big picture like that this like really kind of changes anything about how you view this team. But I think the bigger thing is, and we've talked about kind of how tough their schedule is, how good Big Ten is. Now you can't let this snowball though, because you turn around and you have a massive matchup this week against IU. Are you going to use it as motivation in this game against a rival, or are you going to let this loss kind of snowball? I think that's kind of what you want to see following this past weekend.
Yeah, man. Like you said, man, went to Ohio State, cleaned them up real good, got them up out of there. And yeah, that was kind of my thought going into that Nebraska game, is that they needed to get that first set. You get that first set, it gives you one, it gives you kind of like a margin for error, but also I just think from an app, like from a confidence, and I think that entire gym, you're just kind of like, hey, yes, like we can do this today. Like, look, we got one from them. Unfortunately, though, it was like a tidal wave right afterwards, and Nebraska showed why they're the number one team in the country, and honestly got them up out of there real quick. But yeah, you're hoping that they're, to me personally, don't feel like you should need any motivation as to whenever you're playing IU. Just don't feel like that should be a thing. And the fact too that it's going to be in Indianapolis, going to be at Gainbridge, playing in that atmosphere at that arena. Yeah, there's there, that, to me, there shouldn't be a, well, how will they get up for this game, type conversation that's going on. But yeah, they have to respond, I think, the same way they did after the Illinois game, where they went out west on the West Coast and just and were able to get a couple wins there, and they obviously strung that 3-game win streak before running into Nebraska. If they're able to do the same thing, because in what, 10 days they go to Illinois, and so they have an opportunity to balance the scales there. So I expect these ladies to kind of be itching to get back out on the court, and outside of the fact they're playing IU, but just I'm sure they're not pleased, especially with not just losing, but I think the way those last two sets went. I think they lost like 20, I think like they lost 15 and 16, 25, 16, 25, 15. I forget the order, in those last two sets. So those last two sets, they weren't even necessarily that close. So to get kind of handled like that at home, it's definitely not going to sit well with you. And it's definitely going to have you in a situation of like, all right, one, we want to get back out there to kind of address that issue. And then two, you're still working towards something in terms of seeding and just overall, your overall, like how good your year is going to be. That can be one game. It needs to stay being that one game, like you said. And you just don't want to see, I don't believe that it'll be the start of a losing streak. I think that my hope is that it is. My hope, my thought is that it's just going to be the one off, and then kind of be able to get back to business on Thursday. But that's not a game to overlook. That's a game to get up for and understand that you're going to have to beat IU. That IU's just not going to give you that match. And then hopefully, yeah, they can just win out the rest of the way. I like too that you haven't acknowledged that Nate's prediction, but.
Yeah, I just can't believe he didn't get that one right.
Right.
Some expert, but this feels like the start of a really important stretch right here, for the ladies. It's a stretch where five of their next six is on the road starting Thursday in Gainbridge, in Indianapolis against IU, and then you go to Piscataway to take on Rutgers on Sunday, and then the following week you're in Illinois, back home against Minnesota, and then you're right back out on the road in the end of October, the start of November, at Michigan State and at Michigan. So, five of your next six are away from your home court just feels like a big stretch here coming after that game, where you gotta stack some win. There's a lot of winnable games here, but you don't want to have any slip ups here either.
Yeah, no, and something I'm noticing looking at the schedule too is that Purdue's going to be the ranked team going in, and some of these matchups like Michigan State is ranked, Illinois doesn't appear to be ranked, Rutgers doesn't appear to be ranked. So for those teams, they're going to look at that mat at that when Purdue comes into town, and they're going to look at that as an opportunity to either start something for themselves to be able to really have a good win on their resume if they're in tourney contention, like come tourney time, that type of stuff. So yeah, like you said, I think that this is a big stretch for them for to be going on the road like this, and it's gonna we're gonna I think we'll learn a lot about this Purdue team as well, in terms of what they're the mentally out there, what they're capable of. But like I said, I think they should be able to handle business. I think they should be. But yeah, it definitely won't be something where it's just going to be a cakewalk. Okay, we'll just go handle these five real quick, and then we'll just come back and then play Penn State. It's not. I don't think it's going to be like that.
No, I agree. And I agree with you. I think it will be kind of business trips here, and they will go ahead and handle what they need to do. But it'll all get started on Thursday. Exciting match. We kind of this was one when we had Nate on earlier, after he made that upset prediction. We talked about this match as kind of one that was marked on the calendar. You get, the two schools from Indiana to play at Gainbridge, night game. Like it just feels like it's going to be a fun environment. It'll be on Big Ten Network. And now both teams are ranked too. So, should be a really exciting night, Thursday night there.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Anytime you get to play in a pro venue, like you said, Thursday night, in-state rival. No, there's no re there are no shortage of reasons as to why you shouldn't get up for this game, as I mentioned earlier. So, yeah, it's gonna be really, really interesting. I mean, obviously, we hope that it's a quick three sets for Purdue and get up out of there.
Yeah, so we want to beat IU every sport, every time we can. But best of luck to the ladies there. Again, that'll be a 7 p.m. start, on Big Ten Network. So definitely be sure to check that one out as the number 12 ranked Boilermakers take on the 22 ranked Indiana Hoosiers. But Sim, that'll just about do it for this episode. Got some things off our chest after that game, but I think we're in agreement that, as we look ahead here, there's reasons for optimism. But you gotta start seeing some results. And hopefully that's what we'll see this weekend. Win or lose, we'll be here to break it all down next week, as we, wrap up some football, volleyball, basketball, getting started. We'll have all kinds of fun stuff. So be sure to be on the lookout for all of those. But most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.